Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the New Books Network Entrepreneurship and Leadership Channel. I'm Mark McCurgo, and I'm one of the hosts of the channel, where we explore all kinds of interesting new books to do with entrepreneurship, leadership, startups, and getting things done in a good way in the modern world. And I'm very excited today to be joined by Carter Phipps, who's one of the authors of Conscious Leadership, Elevating Humanity Through Business, which is out now. Published by Penguin, I think. Yes. So, Carter, right, yeah. Hello and welcome, and it's lovely to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here, and look forward to the conversation.
So, Carter, this book is Conscious Leadership. Tell me, how did you come to be involved in writing it?
Yeah, so good question. We have the three authors of the book, which is not, sometimes unusual to have that many authors, And John Mackey, who's the founder of Whole Foods Market, the grocery store chain that's very natural foods, really was a pioneer in the natural foods and organic foods revolution in the States. And I think there's some in England as well. I don't know if it's reached up to Scotland yet. I'm not sure if Whole Foods is up there. But
they don't do a lot of whole food in Scotland. It's mostly fried and fatty. But
So when my other book came out in Evolutionaries was my first book. It came out in 2012, and John Mackey wrote about it and mentioned it in the Wall Street Journal. He had mentioned that he had read it and liked it, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. Here's this kind of CEO and founder, entrepreneur, sort of in the industry who mentioned the book. And so we happened to meet each other a few years later, or about a year later, I think we met each other, and we became friends. And the other author, Steve McIntosh, and I had been work colleagues for a while. We had founded a nonprofit that's a whole nother issue I won't get into right now, but to deal with the political challenges in America. And John became involved with that and became on the board of that. And we just developed a friendship. And over time, we thought we have a common interest. We should write a book together. And John had written a book that had become quite big called Conscious Capitalism, and about how we can elevate capitalism, how we can elevate that capitalism. It gets such a bad name today. I mean, his idea was, no, we need to protect the baby and not throw it out with the bathwater. We need to improve it. We need to upgrade it. But fundamentally, this is, business and markets and capitalism can be a very positive force for humanity. But here's how we can improve it. Here's how we can make it better. Let's not pretend that we can get rid of it. So in some way, that was quite a big book. And so we decided to write a book on leadership that was really a sequel to that book, and really express some of the same sentiments, but more from the perspective of how we can be great leaders of businesses. How do we enact a more conscious capitalism, or more conscious way of doing business at the level of leadership, at the level of individuals of organizations, individuals that are leading startups, entrepreneurs, and really even outside of business, what are the kind of values and principles that we can enact as individuals in whatever organization we're part of, in our communities. So that was the foundation of the book.
Yeah, and we'll get to talking about that. I loved the way in which you say it's not just about leadership in a corporation. It can be leadership in your family or in your relationships or in in your community or wherever it is. So that's great. So now the book is called Conscious Leadership. And of course, it's, as you mentioned, an echo to this previous book of John Mackey's Conscious Capitalism. Let's not talk about conscious for a while. Because I got a background in science, and in science, the opposite of conscious is unconscious, which means you're lying on the floor comatose with nothing going on. So I presume you're not simply talking about leaders who can walk and talk and move around. tell me about this conscious thing.
Absolutely. Well, the idea of that is that in some foundational way, any of us, there are great leaders in the world, and then there have been great leaders in history, right? And, you know, you and I may have certain leadership talents that we grew up with and that we just have naturally, and we can, and, you know, that's who we are and that's who you are. And there are leaders out there that are natural, that don't have to take up the challenge of their own development to be great leaders. So, but for the rest of us, for most of us, for maybe, you know, we can't depend upon our upbringing or our genetics or whatever it is to be great leaders. We actually need to take up the challenge of our own development, to improve, to develop, to evolve as individuals. We need to consciously take up that challenge. We have to be very intentional about it. We have to be very directive about it. We have to really self-reflect and become more self-aware. So we have to take up the challenge of becoming better leaders. And so that's where the conscious really comes in. It's like that's something that individuals really have to and need to and have the opportunity to be very directive and intentional about. And so that's what conscious leadership means. I mean, just don't just depend on whatever gifts you've been given. There's an opportunity as adults. I mean, look, this is something in human history, we're living longer now. We haven't always had the knowledge or space and time or lifespan to appreciate how much we can change and develop as adults, you know. And so, and for leaders, even more so, you know, it's like the kinds of leaders we can be at 40 and 50 or 60 are very different potentially than the kinds of leaders we will be at 25 or at 30, you know. So, but to do that, you know, you need to engage with the self-development process. And that's something that takes effort. It takes intention. And so the book was really to help people do that in all kinds of ways, ways of thinking, ways of practicing, ways of behaving, ways of expanding our mental frameworks as well.
Okay, so this conscious is about thinking about it and being more aware of what we're doing as leaders, and being more focused on how are we doing that, what kind of things are we drawing on, what kind of direction are we moving in, how are we engaging with other people, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and I think that's a really interesting thought, because I think a lot of people have in the past relied on, you know, the leadership style that they got dealt at the beginning.
Fine, but it can improve. Exactly.
And also, I think things are changing. I'm sure they're changing in expectations of leaders as well. I
mean, that is true.
If I remember back, you know, some decades now, people used to say things like, oh, it's not personal, it's just business, when they shafted you for something or other. Exactly. I always objected to that very strongly myself, but it seemed okay at some point to be able to say that. And I was always a bit baffled, but it seems to me that what you're doing is kind of very, very definitely moving away from that sort of thinking into a rather broader aspects of what does it mean to lead in the world and with humanity.
I that's absolutely true, and I think like what you're saying is true. The demands on leaders are at all levels, in politics, in government, in business, in organizations, in communities, are different today than they were. The expectations are greater, and it's not just a supply thing; it's a demand thing. You know, I say you sometimes the kind of like cognitive intelligence, emotional intelligence, social intelligence you have to have, you know, to do sometimes. There's incredible, really, demands to do that. And of course, none of us are going to fulfill all of those demands perfectly or anything like that. But we have to engage our own development on multiple levels, right? It's not enough to be a cognitive superstar, or it's not enough to just be a highly kind of sensitive, caring person. It's not enough to be, you have to really engage multiple lines of development to become the leaders that can be, if you really want to meet those demands, because people expect a lot of leaders today, and especially business leaders. You know, I think that's true. I mean, political leaders too. Sometimes I wish we could demand more of our political leaders. But anyway,
I made no comment about that. But yes, I believe it, for sure. Now, my very first publisher, he always asked me two questions, which I like to ask people when we're talking about books. The first question he always asked was, "Who's the book for?" So, who is this book for, Carter?
Well, it's for business leaders. That's what Elevating Humanity Through Business is for. Entrepreneurs. It's for executives. It's for CEOs. It's for people who are in that world and know they need to find ways to become better leaders and to inspire their teams and to better work with all kinds of people, and also who are in that world and feel that there are opportunities in business to have an impact and make a difference. And that maybe that was the way they chose to express their own life energy in the business world. But they don't necessarily feel like they're having the kind of purpose and impact and on the world or on people around them that they want to. You know, it's like, but business can be a great forum for having a powerful impact. And so it's kind of for those people who want to upgrade all of that and want to kind of get in touch with the higher potential of business. You know, it's like, so it's really for that. Now, the leadership message in the book actually speaks way beyond that. But, you know, you got to be focused about this thing. So it's about business. It's marketed to business. But I hope that anyone out there who's in another field, fundamentally, it's about leadership, full stop. Yeah.
So I can see how somebody who's running a startup or perhaps involved in leading an organization would grab this book. How about if I'm just if I'm a manager, I'm a project team leader or something, I'm kind of in the hierarchy of an organization, is the book going to speak to me?
Yes, it should. It absolutely should. And there are some messages in it that maybe are more more specific to entrepreneurs or to people who are in startups. There's no doubt. But there's also a lot about how you work with teams, and that speaks much more to people. Exactly what you're saying, you know. And a lot of the examples are from businesses that are from big companies, and some of the examples are from Whole Foods Market, and that, you know, that's a $15 billion company, or now it's Amazon owns it. And so those, absolutely, it speaks to a lot of those people at different layers and different levels of an organization, and how to have an impact, and how to think about, you know, how to get ourselves out of the day to day, just the grind of the day to day, and start to think about what we're doing in a more powerful framework and a more interesting framework. And I think, you know, I think one of the reasons why conscious capitalism was made such a hit at the time, why it was so popular, it was like, oh, I think there was this kind of recognition that we need to get business outside of the merely transactional and start thinking about how business can be a win. You know, we have this principle in there called win-win-win. How business can be a win for business, but also how it can be a win for the communities around the business. And a great business, a business that's fulfilling its mission, fulfilling its purpose, it should uplift not just the investors and shareholders, not just the executives and CEO, not just the employees. It should have an uplifting impact on the employees of the business, but it should have this impact on the communities around it. And that's part of a more conscious way of leading, a more conscious way of business, that all of the various stakeholders in the business it's having a positive, uplifting effect on. And for us to get into that mindset, you know, are we thinking about those stakeholders? Are we thinking about how we're going about our leadership on a day to day? Who are the stakeholders in our communities inside the business, our communities outside the business? Are we thinking about the impact we're having on all those? And are we trying to kind of craft solutions and craft ways of going about this that are win-win-win? And working with John, you know, you really see he does that in his own life. And I think leaders can do that in business and have a big impact. And we need that. We need that. We need people because we need, there's so much negativity out there about the business community. And some of that's legitimate and some of it's not, but part of the way you respond to that is that the institutions themselves need to improve. And in a small way, I hope the books like this help the institution of business improve itself.
It was interesting. You were talking a few minutes ago about the kind of demand side of leadership. And I've seen this too. One of the things we've seen in the last few years is people move jobs much quicker than they used to 30 years
ago. Yeah, right. It's true, right.
And if they're not feeling that they're contributing and being appreciated and playing a part, they'll walk
in a way that
I think they're out of there. There's somebody else who'll take them if they're any good, particularly. Whereas in back in the day, people used to think, I can do this job. It's all right. Maybe I'll get a pension at the end of it. And they kind of stuck at it, even if it wasn't very fulfilling. But I think people have kind of chucked that out now for the large part. Many more people want to do something fulfilling with their lives, as well as make a living, support their family, and maybe have the space to do other things, whatever it is they love to do.
There's a hunger for that kind of meaning, I think. There's a hunger for that kind of purpose, that kind of meaning. And I think we're trying to kind of speak to that, and you're right. And so on one hand, there's this kind of higher purpose of thinking about leadership like this. But on the other hand, there's just the practical nature of that. If you aren't able to participate and deliver that for your teams and be part of that yourself. And if you aren't able to swim in that water, you're not going to be able to retain the best people. You're not going to be able to, to have the impact that you want. And you're going to find yourself not succeeding. And even, one of the beautiful things about business, any organization is that to succeed, the team has to succeed. The organization has to succeed. It's not a solo thing. It's like some things in life are about how you do, how you succeed. But you need teams in business as much as anything, and probably more than other things. You need teams around you to succeed. So you got to have great talent, and you got to have people who are committed, and you got to have people who feel fulfilled, at least to some degree, in their work. And so that sometimes just on a very practical level, we have to think about what that means, how we do that.
So the other question my first publisher asked me, after he'd asked me, who's the book for? His second question was always, and what does it do for them? And so let me ask you that rather bold question here, Carter. What does this book do for these people who are going to buy it and they're hungry to learn to be more conscious leaders in the modern world?
Well, in some ways, I think we've been speaking about some of that. I feel like what it does for people is it gives them, ways of thinking, ways of practicing, very practical ways of things to do, and mental and emotional frameworks that can get them out of their usual habits and ways of being that will get them in a kind of a new way of thinking about their own leadership journey. And not only a new way of thinking about it, but also a new way, but steps to take along that journey. Like I can do this. I can do this practice. Throughout the book, we have practices. We have specific things you can do. But sometimes it's easy. There's lots of practices out there. And so we definitely have a lot of practices that people can employ. And I'm proud of that. I'm glad we have that. But sometimes I think people underestimate, part of it is how we see that journey. It's the framework in which we're thinking about it. And I think that one of the things this book does more than anything is gives people new frameworks that will inspire them to walk on that path, and that will get them out of their usual kind of mental and cognitive and emotional frameworks. And, I can think about innovation that way. Oh, I can think about, one chapter we have called Lead with Love. It's about how you lead with love in business. And it gives you examples of leaders and who are doing that, you know, and that's an entirely different way of thinking about the way we walk through the business world that most people are going to talk about, you know. But I feel like if someone reads that chapter, they're going to say, oh my God, maybe I can approach this in a very different way than previously I thought about. It changes their sort of mental and cognitive framework about how they're thinking about what they're doing every day. So that's a big part of the book, I feel. It's like it opens up your worldview.
Excellent. So the book itself is in three kind of main parts, isn't it? And the first part is about vision and virtue. And this is always a great place to start. And of course, starting there is not a new idea in itself. Yeah. But it seems to me that you're kind of being a bit more upfront and a bit more in your face and a bit more kind of grabbing it by the throat than some of previous people who've tackled this kind of topic. So talk a bit about this idea of vision and virtue and purpose, which I think used to be used to be a kind of side effect of a business, perhaps, if it was thought of at all.
Yeah,
but it's kind of coming closer and closer and closer, I think. So what are you bringing to that that will get people?
It's a very good question. God, you know, there's been so many books about purpose, and so sometimes when you're writing about purpose, you think, well, am I going to say that's different than all these other people have said? You know, so. But I think we tackled it, and you know, these are kind of high ideals and ideas, vision and virtue. That's pretty highfalutin in a way. But I think one of the things that we talk about how great we talk about both individual purpose and organizational purpose, and of course the magic happens when a emerging higher individual purpose meets an organization or entrepreneurial idea, and the two come together in a very powerful way, right? So for John Mackey, he began to, you know, he moved in with the Vegetarian Collective in Austin, Texas in the 70s and began to get really interested in natural foods and the organic foods movement. And then suddenly thought, hey, we should start to sell this. And he created, and so his higher purpose began to kind of form itself into the context of a business, you know, and you can see that with lots of entrepreneurs, whether it's a company like Patagonia, I talk about Nike in the book, and you know, it's like their own emerging purpose of a young entrepreneur meets this idea of an organization. And so, but the point we make is that whether or not, however you've thought about purpose, you know, all business, you know, business is itself a sort of a value creating activity. You know, I create something of value that you buy. There's a transaction in that. And the reason you buy it is because you see value in it, right? So embedded in that value creating activity is, no matter how transactional it may seem, no matter how sort of base and transactional we sometimes think of business, you know, right? Exactly. That the embedded in that value creating activity is a higher purpose of a business. And so if you feel like you can't find your purpose or higher purpose of your own business, you have to look at how you create value for other people. Why do you do what you do? And how does that value creating activity, you know, what is, and we talk about different businesses, you know, we talk about, you know, Google is not just, having a search engine. They're trying to, you know, and they're organize the world's information. They're trying to make information more accessible to you. There's a purpose in that. There's a higher purpose. Now we can talk about the, you know, the tech industry and other problems with it or whatever, but in that activity is the potential for a higher purpose. And the more you get connected with whatever the higher purpose, that essential value creating activity of your business and your organization, and the more you are true to that, and the more you keep that as a core idea that you follow, the more powerful the business will be. You know, people talk about Zappos, right? And Tony Hsieh, sorry, the founder of Zappos died recently. Sorry to see that. But what made Zappos so special in the early days was exactly what his book, when he wrote about it, was delivering happiness, right? There was a purpose in their customer service. There was a higher purpose about, we're not just going to have a transaction with you. We're going to deliver to you a kind of the happiness of this kind of incredibly satisfying customer journey. But if the moment they lose touch with that, then they're just selling shoes online, and they're just another company. But when that purpose comes alive, then the quality, their own value creating, that value creating activity comes alive and people feel it. People feel on the other side. So when you walk into a Whole Foods, right, you feel a company whose ethos is all about health and natural foods and organic foods. And that's the context in which you feel. Now they sell all kinds of different foods, but that's the essential thing. And if they lose track of that, then they're just another grocery store. They've lost track of what animates the company. So purpose, there's an individual level purpose, but also company level purpose. So purpose is all about fulfilling that, you know, not losing touch with that. The moment companies lose touch with that, then like what, you know, they begin to often fade in the marketplace as well.
And one of the things I really enjoyed about the book was somewhere, I think you're talking about Zappos and you're saying about all this higher purpose stuff.
Yeah,
and how they should stay in touch with that. But you also then say, very sensibly, but by the way, they've got to be very good at selling shoes as well. You've got to sell a whole bunch of shoes for it to make any sense.
Well, that's a beautiful, I mean, I think this is where I enjoyed writing that chapter because I really wanted to make this point. You know, people think, well, you know, business, it's just about making money. Well, you know, as we make the point, making money is a huge part of it. But it's not just about that. But there's a beauty to that too. And here's the beauty part of that, which is that I have to make money as a business. I'm self-funding. The business is self-funding. They're not like nonprofits. I'm not going out from other people and getting money, right? So businesses are self-funding. You have to make money. But the beautiful thing about that is that means I have to stay in touch with the customer. I have to actually create value for you. If I'm in a nonprofit, I worked in nonprofits for a while. There's something beautiful about nonprofits too, because you can just focus on your higher purpose, and you know, and to the exclusion of anyone else, and that can be a really beautiful thing. But you can also kind of lose touch in that. But with a business, you have to be a kind of what I call like a pace car. You know, you can't be too far ahead of people. You have to be, you're in a relationship with your customers and your clients, right? As a business, so you're in a very direct relationship. You can't float off into some and be into some higher purpose. That's the beauty and the danger of a nonprofit. With a business, you have to be in relationship to people. You can't get too far ahead of them. You know, you can't do things that they don't care about. So the business is very connected to culture. It's very connected to people. And I think that's the, rather than seeing that as just a base transactional thing, I think we should see that as a positive thing, because then you can you're in dialogue. And if you're connected to your higher purpose at the same time, that's a very powerful dialogue. You know, does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that makes wonderful sense. And that really makes sense of these two kind of levels that you're talking about, with the purpose and the kind of functionality as well.
Exactly. The business is a dynamic relationship between that polarity, really. I mean, that's where if you get too lost in just the base transactional nature of the business, then you've lost touch with what animates the business, you know, and you've lost touch with leading the way and deliver. But if you get too lost in your higher purpose you'll lose touch with your customers and your clients. Yeah. You'll do the same. So that business, in an ideal way, it forces you to hold those two worlds together.
That's such a great framework, Carter. I'm just reminded, this is not in your book, but you might be interested to hear it, the story of ICI, Imperial Chemical Industries, which used to be the biggest company in the world back in the 1950s. Wow. And their kind of mission was better industry through chemistry, really. They're a chemical company.
Right.
And they were amazingly successful. They were across the whole world, across the whole British Empire, vast organization. And then in the 1990s, they got a new CEO, and he said, chemistry, it's all old hat, that. Let's become a money-making company.
Right.
And let's become, our job is to create shareholder value. That's our mission now. And within 10 years, the whole company was gone.
Amazing.
Because they sold off division after division after division. And in the end, and started new things that didn't go anywhere. And in the end, they were only left with a paint company, which they sold to Akzo Nobel. And they disappeared in 10 years, the biggest company in the world, to nothing in 10 years.
That's
because
amazing.
They lost track of their purpose, I think, which was better industry through chemistry. And instead, who cares about that? Let's just make money. And actually, making money is a very bad reason to be in business, fundamentally. Because you haven't got
exactly.
any Where's the magic in that? Where's the thing that's going to connect you with your people and your customers and your innovations with that?
Businesses need to make money to survive. But if the purpose of a business becomes making money, then you've lost touch with whatever animates that business, and it's not. And the chances of it being successful in the long run, I think, go way down. And you see that all the time. It's like people they lose track of that. There, a great example in the U.S. of that was Home Depot. My wife works as a collaborative writer, and she works with people to write books. And one of the people she worked with is Arthur Blank, who was the founder of a huge company called Home Depot. But it started in the 70s and 80s. And it grew into this huge, incredibly successful company. And then he and the founder had left in the late 90s, and they brought in a sort of a GE executive who did the same thing. He said, okay, we're just going to like focus on making this financially lean and mean, you know? But they lost touch with the incredible quality of what Home Depot was doing, the customer service, and all these kind of higher purpose to the business. And within about 7 or 8 years, the company completely had crashed and had lost track of its mission. And he basically kind of ran it into the ground. And they had to bring someone else in who reanimated the purpose. And over the last 15 years, the business has been incredibly successful. But for that period, you really lost track of it's like they lost track of the core mission in this goal to make financial success. And they fell on one side of that polarity, and it destroyed the value of the business. Now, businesses need to make money, but if that becomes that's not the goal you aim at. Yeah. That's a byproduct of the goal you aim at, right? That's the thing. And people lose track of that all the time. And it's such an important, it's subtle, but it's so true.
Just to mention another book, which if you're listening to this podcast, you might also enjoy, Obliquity by John Kay, which is about how some things are better approached sideways than directly.
Exactly.
And he says that profits and happiness are two things that are better approached sideways than directly. They're the side effect of something else rather than something to be set as number one performance indicator. And I think it's a great book. And it's such an important idea. And sometimes I think in the sort of Harvard MBA world that we used to live in anyway, where it's all about targets and goals and execution,
KPIs.
People think that you can treat anything in that kind of, instead of goal, turn the handle and make progress and you'll get there. That you can treat happiness or higher purposes like that. And I don't think you can. I think that they come better with this way that you're talking about, which is a money-making business is a side effect of a successful business that's engaging with its customers in a good way and growing itself.
Yeah. Serving its stakeholders. And shareholders are one stakeholder, but they're only one stakeholder. There are other stakeholders are two, right? You know, are important as well. And so you have to have this dynamic relationship with it all. And you can't, you can't lose track of finances. You can't lose track of making money. That's an important part of it. And no one's saying it's not, but it's so important. I love the point of like, you know, it's a byproduct. You don't approach it directly. There's this in the old, I think it was, some of the great estates of Britain as you come in the estates, right? I think the French estates, I don't know the history of architecture, but like in some estates, you come in, you go directly to the main house. But in a lot of the British estates, you come in and you kind of wind around. You never approach the manor house directly. You approach it, obliquely or something, you know? And so you never approach it directly.
All of a sudden it appears, right?
That's the whole, exactly.
And the landscape architects who did that were very aware of the importance of that first moment that you kind of exactly work through the woods and everything, then finally you see the thing, and this, how you engineer that was always really one of the top things that those people used to.
I love that. It's a wonderful metaphor for like also how profits appear, because you're not pursuing them directly. You're pursuing other things that are more important, and they will appear and they'll be important. They're important, but
let's talk about stakeholders for a minute then. Seems to me that the range of stakeholders is getting bigger. Back in the day, we had shareholders, and then we started to think about stakeholders, and the list of stakeholders was often employees, maybe customers, maybe suppliers, maybe that was kind of That was the list of stakeholders. And now the list of stakeholders is expanding. So how are you seeing that?
It's so true. I think you're absolutely right. And it continues to expand. And you're right. I think it was employees, customers, you know, now shareholders, if you're a public company or a private company with investors. And, you know, at a certain point, I think we realize, you know, communities obviously are stakeholders around the communities. And then, you know, the environment, the ecological impacts of the business became an important stakeholder at a certain point. And it's something that businesses have to be concerned about. And then, I mean, it continues to expand. I mean, in the way we serve communities, I think businesses can't do everything. You can't have the leaders of business just spend all day cultivating stakeholders, obviously, you know. But that needs to be in the mindset of how we think about businesses. I mean, even today with all the diversity and inclusion work that people are doing, that becomes another kind of stakeholder of the business that a business has to be aware of, how they're being perceived in the communities, how that issue is being perceived. So I agree. I think as our demands of business are increasing, and we can't just put all the expectations of society on business and say, okay, you do it. Obviously that doesn't work either. Business also has to deliver on its value. It can't get too lost in all these other things, but it's for leaders. It's the framework of seeing, of understanding that you have all these stakeholders. So as you make decisions, whether it's explicitly in the front of your mind or it's just in the back of your mind, it's still there. And I think understanding that these are critical stakeholders. And I find it fascinating because you see businesses that are really good at one stakeholder, but they're really not good at the others, or really good at two, but they're not good at the others. It's like, and that can be a powerful thing when a business is really good at serving the customer, or some businesses are really good at taking care of their employees, but they're not so good at serving the customer. And I think any business at any time in the life cycle can be, or maybe a business is just really good with the community around them, but they're kind of slowly failing as a business, So in the life cycle of a business, we can naturally have different strengths, but you need to be conscious of that and aware of we have this great strength. We take care of our employees in a beautiful way, but that's not going to be good enough over time. We also have to take care of our customers, or we also have to take care of our shareholders, So it's natural for businesses to have certain strengths, but to be aware of those and very conscious about them is important.
And not everyone in a category is going to be the same either. Some people are looking for a job in which they can give their heart and soul, and other people, would value more flexibility about how often do I have to come to work? How much choice do I have over many shifts I do or whatever? And that suits them. And sometimes people get very hung up on everyone should want one thing or the other. But actually, there are loads of different people out there wanting loads of different things. And probably there needs to be loads of different ways of thinking about work and employment and an organization to help those people do the thing they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as we get more sophisticated about just people and as businesses, well, that comes to serving your employees or your team members as stakeholders. I think, it's like, I think there's a kind of understanding there's different pathways through an organization that can all be satisfying and self-actualizing, but can be very different. Maybe I'm going to come in the organization, I'm going to go up the hierarchy of the organization or want increasing roles of power, but someone else comes in and they want to do a good job and that's it. And they want to go home at 5 and that's it. And that's fine too. So it's like, understanding, not trying to put everyone into similar boxes, understanding, making space for all those various ways of self-actualizing within the context of the company.
One of the things we seem to be seeing, at least here in the UK where I am, maybe where you are too, is the rise of a lot of jobs that are, somewhat mechanical, and delivery drivers, for example, who kind of have to go around with loads of packages and they only have so many hours to do them. And there doesn't seem to be much in the way of progression possibility. After that. And that's why I wouldn't want to do that sort of job myself. But a lot of people are not in a position of being able to choose, I think.
Yeah, right.
So what do you think about this, the rise of these we call them precariat jobs sometimes, where it's all, you know, clinging on by your fingertips on very modest pay, but without potentially without a sort of a way to go to improve.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a you know, as a society, we're going to have to figure out how to deal with this in a way that in a way that sort of dignifies the work and allows people to make the kinds of money where they can have a life, you know. And one of the principles of conscious capitalism that I love is like is and I know this can't apply to the gig economy in all kinds of ways, but it's a great principle, which is no dead end jobs. You know, it's like there's always pathways that someone can move forward, you know, and move in the company. There are always new things for them to do, ways they can move forward, ways they can make more money, you know, like provide, you know, not just dead end jobs, not just a job that has no forward looking. You know, people need to feel there's opportunity and at all levels of the organization. So I do think that's an important principle. But I know, like for Uber drivers or gig workers, or you know, maybe if you're working in an Amazon warehouse or things like that, that can be a harder thing to do. And I do feel like, I mean, this is stepping back on a slightly different level, but you know, there was an era in the emergence of the factory when we had to kind of figure out how to provide a living wage and a decent standard of living to factory workers. You know. And how we could do it. And that was a very monotonous way of job, but we had to kind of figure that out. And as a society, it took a few decades to do that in a way. And then in the post-war era, you know, factory jobs actually became pathways into a somewhat of a middle class life. And I figure this is a very different era. We have all these kind of flexible gig workers and factory, like you're saying, there's all this rise of this whole new types of jobs. And I think we're going to have to figure out how we build a kind of a societal dignity and a leg up to a reasonable middle class existence out of those kinds of jobs, you know. And maybe in the past we did that. Maybe labor unions were important in that. I don't know exactly the answer to that. But I have a feeling we haven't found the answer yet. I don't know if I have the answer, but it's something we should be concerned about as policymakers. You know,
it's certainly a challenge, isn't it? Certainly a challenge. Now, the book is, as I said, it's in three parts, and the second part, is called Mindset and Strategy, and you talked a bit about mindset and the importance of mindset. One of the chapters in that section is called Think Long Term, and it seems to me this is a very interesting challenge. Because businesses have become in one way more and more driven by short-term results and quarterly numbers and fluctuating stock prices and that whole thing. And people used to say, well, without the short-term, there is no long-term. Yeah. On the other hand, if you're going to be conscious about it, it seems to me that part of that consciousness has to be, where are we going in the long-term?
Yeah.
So how can we do that? How can we kind of keep going in the short term, but not let that become the driver that leads us to all sorts of unfortunate choices?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the short term is part of the long term. So obviously the short term is always important, but there is something about the financial markets, I think, today that have driven a kind of quarterly thinking into the business community. That is, what have you done for me yesterday kind of thing that can, it can privilege a kind of financial immediacy that can be disruptive to a long-term health of the business and ultimately hurts everyone, including the people who are looking shareholders, including the people who are looking for better finances. Right. So I think the short-term pressures are often present in business. The long-term pressures are not as obvious. And so we have to bring those to balance out the short-term, right? We have to awaken, we have to make sure that the long-term health of the business is awake in our own leadership minds, you know? And if we don't, then we'll lose track of that. And even more so if you're a public company, even more so if you have the pressure of an activist shareholder or the pressure of quarterly earnings, you know? You have to be able to think about the long term. So we talk about the demands of that, the pressures of that, and even more so in this kind of odd mix of things, which is that you have technology that is more and more disruptive. So even in industries that, you know, where the timelines of their investment cycles are 10, 15, 20 years, I think of like the energy industry, which is thinking about 20, 25 years, you know, even industries like that now they have to think in like 5-10 years. They can't, who knows what's going to happen in 25 years in the energy industry. It's changing that fast. Technology is impacting more and more industries that even were once a little more conservative, a little more long-term. So is that balance, as more and more of our attention gets focused on all these disruptive shorter and shorter term effects, it's very important that we as leaders kind of maintain that long-term focus. And I just think that's critical. And you know, if for all the things we've been talking about, they can't survive and thrive in a world in which we're just trying to manage for the next quarter.
Mm. So the third part of the book is called People and Culture, and you're talking there about evolving the team and revitalizing and all sorts of good things like that. And you introduce this idea of cultural intelligence, which it seems to me is a very, very intriguing part of the message of the book. Say a bit about that, please.
Yeah, so cultural intelligence comes from an integral philosophy that both the other authors and myself were very interested in. And it has to do with understanding different cultural worldviews as part of our template of intelligences. You know, we need cognitive intelligence, we need an emotional intelligence, we need a kind of a social intelligence for understanding social dynamics. But this is also understanding some of the cultural dynamics and the cultural intelligence. And in the appendix of the book, we walk through different worldviews that people can have. And being aware of these worldviews that people inhabit and as a leader is a very important and powerful thing. It's like understanding that people have different ways of making meaning. People have different sets of values that cohere together to make up the worldview that they come from. And they may be very different than yours as a leader. But if you can understand more about those values, you're able to meet the needs and demands they want and understand where they're coming from in a different kind of way. And that cultural intelligence is very critical. But to do that, we have to understand the values that inform these worldviews. And most people are very unaware of that. And this is a kind of a new way of thinking about culture and about tribes, the tribes that make our worlds and the way in which values inform us. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting, it's a new area. I don't think no one in leadership, I don't think has written about this in quite the same way before. So it's an important thing, and it's something we care deeply about, because for me, this insight into cultural intelligence, it's not just about business, it's also about politics. And my co-authors and me founded the whole institute to respond to the polarization in American politics around cultural issues. And so it's the same issue. How can we understand where the different values and worldviews that people have and inhabit? And once we begin to understand that, how can we have an impact on people's lives and on keeping us from being at each other's throats? Because what happens is, I have a different worldview than you have a different worldview, and that person has a different worldview. And instead of finding a way to kind of work together and take advantage of the strengths and weaknesses, and avoid the weaknesses of each of those worldviews, we have at each other. We fight endlessly, and we feel like you're wrong and you feel like I'm wrong, and we get into these tribal disagreements. And that's happening in businesses too. I mean, one of the things that's happening in business today, I'm just as a slight aside, is that you're having a generation that's coming into the business world, I guess it's Gen Z now, That the next one after the millennials, and they're very driven by what we refer to in this as a kind of a postmodern progressive worldview. And it's a way of making sense of the world. It's a way of thinking about values in the world, right? And they're coming to the business communities, and they're wanting the business communities to adhere to all of their values. And this is happening in the tech industry a lot, you see, and they're saying, no, we want all these things that are important to us. We want you to deal with. And they're very vocal about it. They're very strong about it. And they're not accepting a no for an answer. And how the leaders deal with this, how the leaders respond to this is really important. Because, and I think if you don't have that level of cultural intelligence, you tend to, it's much harder to know how to respond. You know, for someone like me, who's Gen X or a boomer, or even maybe an older millennial, like, how am I going to respond to this new worldview, a new way of these new values that I've never had to respond to as a leader? And I think business leaders have made a lot of mistakes in how they deal with that. And so I think that what we're trying to do is suggest that there's another way of looking at it that will help. Anyway.
Fabulous. Thank you, Carter. So tell me, what are you working on right now? What's coming up next for you?
Well, I'm doing some writing again. I've been writing some columns, not writing a book at the moment. Maybe eventually I will do that. But I've been writing columns. The institute I just mentioned that I co-founded is publishing creating a new online media site. And I've been writing columns for that site. Columns are more culturally and politically oriented, not so business oriented. But I've been working on that, and it will be called the Post Progressive Post.
Okay.
And it's about finding the kind.
Is it out yet?
It will be out in about a month. It'll be out in the middle of June. So yeah. So I've been writing for that, writing some articles for that. But hopefully, maybe by the fall, I'll be working on another book. And also, I've been enjoying doing a podcast. Like, you have a podcast. It's called Thinking Ahead. So people can always check out that podcast if they're interested in my work.
Yes, that would be an excellent thing to do. So we've been talking about Conscious Leadership, Elevating Humanity Through Business by John Mackey, Steve McIntosh, and Carter Phipps, who's been my guest today. And if you're interested to explore more about this this integral worldview thing, I'd also recommend Carter's previous book, Evolutionaries, which is a really interesting, broad-ranging, and incredibly well-researched dive into a whole bunch of stuff in that area. So that if you're interested in that, go for that. But definitely look at Conscious Leadership. It does a lot of things that it says on the tin, but it does them a bit more, I think, a bit more upfront and a bit more hard-edged, almost hard-edged about soft stuff. Yeah, I want to say that.
I like
it's
that.
Really good. It's really refreshing.
Hard-edged about soft stuff. That's good. We'll put that in the back of the book.
so that's the book, Conscious Leadership, Elevating Humanity to Business. John Mackey, Steve McIntosh, and Carter Phipps, published by Portfolio Penguin, which is an edition of Penguin Random House. And Carter, it's been great to talk to you. Thanks so much for being our guest today on the Entrepreneurship and Leadership Channel of New Books Network.
Thanks, Mark. It's lovely to reconnect. It's great to see you again.
Thank you.